This is the lecture for March 1997. The title is Malachi and Modern Times. The prophecy of Malachi ends the book of 12 prophets known as the Minor or Shorter Prophets. It is part of the 12 short prophecies that the ancient Hebrews placed on one scroll, and they reckoned all 12 of the prophecies to be reckoned as one book. Those prophecies are found in our Bibles, all of them in the exact order that they should be in almost all versions, starting with Hosea and going all the way to the end prophet Malachi. Malachi, the prophecy that we are going to be discussing today, was the 12th. And there is a type of teaching that these 12 prophecies here deal with the whole of the nation of Israel, which were, of course, represented by 12 tribes, and that these prophecies all put together are those designed primarily for the nation of Israel. And now you and I figure in to this simply because the end time scenario of prophetic events, which we find mentioned in the book of Revelation, deal essentially with Israel in the Middle East and Jerusalem. But since we're all a part of the world community at this present time, you will find that as time goes on, that what happens in the Middle East is going to profoundly affect you and me living even in the Americas or in Europe or in Asia or wherever. We're going to find that the prophetic sequence of events mentioned in the scripture to occur just prior to and leading up to the second advent of Christ to this earth, though most of them will happen in the Middle East, will have an effect even upon us who live in the Western world or wherever we are in this earth. The earth, so to speak, is getting smaller and smaller all the time, and I'm sure that you are aware of that very principle. Now, this Malachi is the last of the 12 prophecies, 12 minor prophecies. And they are, as I said before, all together on one scroll and represent one book in the Hebrew canon. The first seven of these prophecies, starting with Hosea and going to Nahum, were given in the Assyrian period of power in the world. The next two have to do with the Babylonian period, known as the Neo-Babylonian, that is Habakkuk and Zephaniah. And the last three are Haggai, Zechariah, and also this book of Malachi. They were all written and composed after the Babylonian captivity of the Jews. You will recall that in the early part of the 6th century B.C., Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, brought his armies down to Judea and conquered the city of Jerusalem. The city itself was destroyed by fire, and the temple of God, which had existed from the time of King Solomon, almost 400 years, went up in smoke, and it was completely destroyed. The Jews were taken to Babylon, where they stayed for almost 70 years. However, in the time of Cyrus, king of Persia, and you can read of this in several places in the Bible, but notably in Ezra chapter 1, beginning in the first verse and going through about the fourth, you will find in the time of Cyrus, king of Persia, he allowed the Jews to go back to Palestine, about 50,000 of them, under the leadership of Zerubbabel and the high priest, who was Joshua. Now, Zerubbabel, he is mentioned in the book of Haggai, and also the book of Zechariah, very prominently, both of them are. And Zerubbabel himself was given several prophecies in that he would, in one day, or one of the signets, having the signet ring of his, would one day establish a temple here on earth, which would have an everlasting value to it. Now, the temples that were established back in the 6th century, the last part of the 6th century B.C., by those who had come out of the Babylonian captivity, some of them may have thought that their temple established at that time would be the major temple of the prophecies uttered by Isaiah and so forth. But they found out that that was not the case. What Haggai said about the establishment of the cornerstone for the temple, the foundation stone, which was founded on the 9th month and the 24th day of the month on the Hebrew calendar in our winter time. That was to be a very important day, according to Haggai. And from that day forward, we find that Israel was to be blessed beyond compare. What we find, however, as I've said in previous lectures, is that God is the one who is in charge of all chronology. Remember what Jesus said to the apostles after his resurrection from the dead, and just before he went back to heaven? He said, "It's not for you to know the times or the seasons which the Father hath placed in his own power." But we are taught to take the message of God into the world, and that's what we are doing. It's not that we understand the chronological prophecies perfectly, and we do not. However, we're coming closer to the time of the end. Daniel chapter 12 and verse 4 and 9 says that as we approach the time of the end, knowledge, the knowledge of the prophecies, which absolutely include chronology and geography, as well as the major events, where they fit in a consecutive way with one another, that we will begin to understand them as never before. In fact, the Apostle Peter said in his teaching to the Jews in the third chapter of the book of Acts, that a time of great refreshment was going to come on the earth just prior to the second advent of Christ to this earth. That refreshment would be so wonderful and good to the earth that the full knowledge of what the prophecies were stating will actually come to pass, and you and I will begin to comprehend them. We will understand them as never before. Of course, it is up to God to open the door on all of these things. You and I of ourselves cannot understand the prophecies, even though they are written in the Scriptures. And in actual fact, chronologically speaking, some prophecies are actually separated, as far as fulfillment is concerned, 2,000 years separates even one verse from another. So you see, we have to be very careful when it comes to things of this nature. And I have to warn every one of you that that is the case. However, I am also want to show you, and it's most important that we realize this, that as we approach the end of the age, knowledge shall be increased. And God, through His Holy Spirit, can give you and me and others in the world who will submit to Him more knowledge of what He intends to do as we approach this end of the age. In actual fact, the Apostle Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 that all of the events mentioned in the Holy Scriptures before, going from the time of the Exodus or even before that, but the time of the Exodus on down and through the period of David and Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and the post-Babylonian period and all of that, these things were written and put into a book called the Holy Scriptures, canonized and all of that, under the divine influence of God, to be able to help us at the end of the age to understand what the truth of prophecy and of doctrine and everything like that is supposed to be. Now, that's what he said, and I have given lectures in the past to show on many occasions that there is a repetition of events, even in history. The book of Ecclesiastes is just filled with this, and the book of Isaiah also, how that God, when he gives prophecies of the past that even had a past fulfillment, that they themselves, within a proper type of prophetical chronological scenario, will be repeated again. Exactly, dotting of the I and crossing of the T. That is a prophetic principle, and I've given lectures on that to show it in the past. Now, what we need to recognize, however, is that the prophecies found in this book called the Holy Scriptures are really designated for us who live at this end of the age. To give you an example how this can be proved pretty easily, you will recall by looking at the 22 chapters of the book of Revelation. Now, that is reputed to have been written by Jesus Christ himself, and that's true. I have no doubt about that. But the actual one who took pen in hand and put it down was John the Apostle. And he was told what to write and how to write it. Now, what he did was to garner in all types of prophecies from various ages in which they were given. You know, the Bible itself, the Old Testament, occupies about 3,500 years of prophetic teaching, more than that, almost 4,000, if you go right back to Adam. And this prophetic teaching was given at different periods of time by different individuals. As far as the Old Testament is concerned, there are about 30 different people involved in the writings of those works. And you see, they were given at various periods of time, sometimes scattered over a 1,600-year period, in different geographical circumstances, in different historical environments. All of these things. And yet, you know what John did? You can look at it very easily and see it. He took a scripture from Isaiah dealing with that time back there and put it into a prophetic context dealing with the period just before the second advent of Christ back to this earth. He did the same thing by going into the Psalms. He did it by going into Jeremiah. He did it by going into Ezekiel. He did it by going into Daniel and in various other places. And he puts them down into a series of events normally associated with a seven-year span of time just prior to the second advent of Christ here on this earth, and then gives us a type of connected prophetic scheme so that you and I would be aware of how to interpret the prophecies of the Old Testament, and we might also say the Olivet prophecies of Christ and those given by Paul, put them into a proper scenario so that we can understand them in a correct way. Now, as time goes on and we get closer to that period of time, God says he will open up more knowledge. Isn't it interesting, however, that in the past 40 years since I've been in the ministry of teaching, I have been amazed how much I myself have learned, and you have learned. It all hasn't come from Ernest Martin. We have learned. A lot of people have been able to bring out new teachings, not new teachings, old teachings, but they're new to us from the Bible, that we now can see things in the Bible that we never saw before. We're just on the verge of understanding the biblical revelation as never before. And I'll tell you, you and I live in exciting times. We're living in the times when the Bible is coming alive. And the Bible was really intended for you and for me at this present time. You take, for example, I can give you another one of that. You know, when Matthew introduced Jesus into the world, he talked about a star that led the wise men, the Magi, to King Herod, and then on down to Bethlehem, where they gave their gifts to the Christ child. Now, he only spoke about that star, but that was only the tip of the iceberg of what was happening in the heavens at that time. It was like a golden nugget to give the key to what was occurring. Now that we know the time of his birth, we can, it's like a curtain coming up, like the early fathers of the church said, it appeared, he appeared, Christ did, in the year 3 to 2 BC, in that period of time. You lift up the curtain of that time and look into the heavens to see what was happening. You find that what Matthew said about the star makes perfectly good sense. But that's just the tip of the iceberg of what was happening in the heavens at the time. Now, with computers at the end of the age that we have, and with people interested in astronomy like we are, you know, NASA, we send people to the moon. We got the Hubble telescope up there. We're interested, very much all of us are, in the heavens out there and so forth. But we're able now, by the use of computers, to replicate what was happening in 3 to 2 BC. And my, even the astronomers, even the secular astronomers, are amazed at what was happening in the heavens that introduced the Christ child into the world. You see, we find that Matthew only gave just the top of the iceberg about that star. But the star was an indication to say to us, look further, my people. And we look further, and that is what we see. And you know, the ones who saw that the heavenly pageantry that was taking place when Jesus was introduced into the world back there at the end of the first century BC, they were able to tell it to their children, and the children would respond energetically, no doubt. But then those children have to tell it to the grandchildren, you see, and then the great-grandchildren, and as time goes on, the knowledge of it goes away, and they do not see the significance of it. And by the end of the first century, you know, the only thing that was left about what was happening at the introduction of Jesus into the world as an infant was what we find in Matthew's account about the star leading the wise men. And that has been the case all the way through until our modern times. Now, at our time now, however, with computers, we can in an instant see what was happening graphically, 3 to 2 BC, without any difficulty whatsoever. So all of a sudden, now you and I at the end of the age are exposed to the same thing they were at the end of the first century BC, that everybody in the interim period there were completely oblivious to. So you see, God at the end of the age is bringing out new things for you and me to be able to see. There's where the Bible comes in as well. Not only are we able to see scientific things that are important relative to the biblical revelation, but we're also able to see doctrinal matters clearer. We're able to see prophetic matters clearer. And that is why I can, with all of these things put together in a way where we can understand it, say that Malachi is talking about modern times. I can say that. I can say it with a great deal of conviction, simply because I know that to be the case. What we have here in this last letter, or last book of the 12 minor prophets, is a conclusion to that one book called the Minor Prophets. It's the conclusion to the message to the 12 tribes of Israel, because all of these prophecies concern Israel and concern Jerusalem and concern the temple, either a temple that was destroyed, a temple to be rebuilt, or a rebuilt temple, or whatever. It's all in here, and it's important for us to know. The center is Jerusalem for all of them, and that is where it ought to be. And we find that finally here in the book of Malachi, the last thing that he says here is to look for an Elijah to come in the future. Now, Zechariah said, look for a Zerubbabel to come, or a Joshua the high priest to come. He also said to look for two anointed ones to come, that the book of Revelation, calls the two witnesses. He says at the last, look for Elijah to come. Jesus, when he was on earth some 300-400 years later, pointed to John the Baptist and said, there's your Elijah right there. But he also said in Matthew 17, when he was talking to the apostles, there is yet an Elijah to come. And that Elijah to come is the one mentioned here in the book of Malachi, the last words of the 12 minor prophets, looking for someone to come like an Elijah who will do what? It says, restore all things. Restore all things. That's why Peter said in the third chapter of the book of Acts, starting in verse 20 and 21, there's a time of restitution of all things coming. A great refreshment is coming. There is an Elijah to come in the future who will restore the knowledge of the truth. We're going to be able to understand chronology a lot better, prophecy a lot better, geography a lot better, doctrine a lot better, everything as we get closer to the time. And you and I have experienced in the last, for me anyway, the last 40 years, some of you the last 30 or 20 or 10 or 5 or 1 for that matter, you have learned things yourselves that you probably never realized you would in your lifetime. We are beginning to grow in grace and in knowledge as never before. And the book of Malachi here can rightly be titled Malachi and Modern Times, because he is talking here about times in the future. True enough, the environment in which he wrote was the last part of the 5th century B.C., some 430 years perhaps, or 20 years before the birth of Jesus on this earth. Now, that's the historical environment. And we find within his writings here information concerning that time. I'm going to have to give that to you, because you can't understand Malachi without understanding the history, the context in which it is written. And it centers on Jerusalem. It centers on the temple. It centers on the priesthood primarily, and the people of Israel, and what they were doing at the time. And what is described here is a period of great disappointment. You know, as I mentioned in my lecture on Haggai, in there, it spoke about a time, because even at that time after the Babylonian captivity, they were not experiencing what they thought they should experience. After all, they had come back to Jerusalem. They had obeyed God, they thought, in doing that. But then in Haggai, in the first chapter, he said, consider your ways, because you haven't done what I told you to do. They got back to Jerusalem all right. They started to build their own houses all right, but they forgot God's house. And because God's house was forgotten, then he brought on them drought, mildew, and problems and difficulties. Now, Haggai said, if you change your ways, the very moment that you lay that foundation stone on the temple, which is the month of Kislev, the 9th month, and the 24th day of the month, from that day on, I'm going to bless you. And he left it at that. Well, he did say that Zerubbabel would be the one who would have a signet, and that he would be the one to finalize the temple. Now, that's what he ended with. 2 months later, however, Zechariah comes along. And in my lecture on Zechariah, you will recall that he had to explain what Haggai did not mean, what they thought he meant, and he had to explain what he did not mean. Zechariah and Haggai were contemporaneous with one another. They lived about 60, 70 years, or prospered and flourished about 60 or 70 years before the time of Malachi. And Zechariah comes along and says, what Haggai said about you being blessed is absolutely true. But the Jerusalem that he's talking about and the temple he's talking about is a future Jerusalem. He's talking about a future temple. He's talking about a future Joshua, the high priest. He's talking about a future Zerubbabel, who is a prince of Israel through David. He's talking about a future sons of oil, known as the two witnesses in the book of Revelation. You see, Zechariah is coming along and explaining what Haggai said, because after the time of Haggai, instead of them being blessed after the ninth month, the 24th day of the month, they continued right on with many problems. As a matter of fact, 60 years later, when we read Malachi here, they were still having difficulties. They still hadn't come to that prosperity that it looked like they were to have. Now, you can imagine how many of the Jews who had returned from Babylon at the time would have been upset with this matter. They were saying, look, we have done our job. Well, in actual fact, God said that they did not. They had not done the way that they should have. They should have considered their ways. And he went on to say in Haggai, you're still unclean. And I can prove it, he says. He said, if a man touches a dead body, is not the man himself unclean? And you can't go in the temple? And they said, yes. He said, well, that's the way this nation is. You're still unclean. Now, they continued to be unclean. And in the book of Zechariah, they continued to be unclean. But in Zechariah, it says, in one day's time, I'm going to take sin away from this nation. And really, that sin was taken away in the time of the branch that Zechariah talked about to come. And that branch was Jesus Christ. That branch was to have seven eyes, symbolically speaking, that could see all things on the earth. And in the book of Revelation, chapter 4, you'll find that Jesus was known as the Lamb with seven eyes, seven pairs of eyes. Now, that's a symbol, of course. That means that he had the seven spirits, able to know everything that's going on earth. In fact, he's the one who engineers everything that is happening on earth, even in what happens in the Gentile worlds, wherever on earth, and certainly what happens in Israel and in Jerusalem and in the temple. And we find that the prophets here are trying to tell Israel that you ought to be depending upon God. He knows what he is doing. And chronology is a matter that is in his hands, not in yours. Remember again, and I repeat, after Jesus had been here 40 days after his resurrection, he was talking to his apostles. And the last thing he said to his apostles was, it is not for you to know the times or the seasons which the Father has placed in his own power. However, he did say in Zechariah that these events that they thought were going to take place back there are for a future time. And they will take place. Brethren, they will take place by the dotting of the I and the crossing of the T. Now, here's what they were expecting to happen back there when they got back from Babylon. You can read this in the first chapter of Ezra. Now, Ezra lived sometime after Zerubbabel and Joshua, but he records history of what happened. So we find Ezra in the book of Ezra, verse 1. Now, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord might be fulfilled by Jeremiah, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, and he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and he put it also in writing, saying, thus saith Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord God of heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he hath charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who is there among you of all his people? His God be with him. Let him go up. Let him go up to Jerusalem. To do what? To build the house of the Lord. Now, that was Cyrus, king of Persia, who said that. There was a prophecy in the book of Isaiah, by the way, that spoke about that. And this was the prophecy that the Jews were depending upon. If you go to Isaiah 44, beginning in verse 21, now I'm giving you this to show what the Jews were expecting and why Malachi is coming along and telling them what is going to happen in the future. They were expecting it to happen then. Malachi says it's in the future. Zechariah was telling them, though they expected it to happen then, it's going to be in the future. Now, it's going to happen, but it's going to happen once certain events take place, you see, that are necessary for sin to be taken out of the land, for sin to be dealt with, for the branch to appear to do all of these things. So here is the prophecy that the Jews were relying upon, who came back to Jerusalem under Zerubbabel and Joshua the high priest, about 50,000 of them. Well, they were reading the prophecy of Isaiah. Here's what they expected. Chapter 44, verse 21. Remember these, O Jacob and Israel, for you are my servant. I have formed you. You are my servant, O Israel. You shall not be forgotten of me. I have blotted out as a thick cloud your transgressions. That's pretty good. Then it goes on to say, down in verse 29, that he is going to say to Jerusalem, you shall be inhabited, and to the cities of Jerusalem you shall be built, and I will raise up the decayed places thereof. Then he says in verses 27 and 28, I saith of Cyrus, he is my shepherd. You see that Cyrus there that let them go back? And shall perform all my pleasure, even saying to Jerusalem, you shall be built, and to the temple your foundation shall be laid. Now that's the prophecy they were depending upon. Read the next section of chapter 45, though. It goes on to say here, Israel shall be saved in the Lord with an everlasting salvation. You shall not be ashamed nor confounded, world without end, and you're going to be blessed. Now, to make a long story short, that's the prophecy they were expecting. They were expecting much, but they got drought instead. They got difficulties. Why? Consider your ways. Consider your ways. Now Malachi comes along and has to tell them the same thing. Consider your ways. It's not God who has gone astray. It is you. On the B side of this lecture, we will come to the book of Malachi itself, and you will see what was happening back there in the 5th century B.C., which has ramifications for our time today. Turn over the cassette tape at this juncture.